Hey folks, right before we start this episode, it's me, your pal Alex Schmidt. I just want to say thank you so much for the very kind notes and messages and other things about the new one-off podcast miniseries I made. It is called One Way to Make an Emoji. If you don't know, that is a show about me creating the bison emoji. That's going to be a new emoji on your phone in 2020, like sometime later this year. We don't know when. But it also goes into a lot more stuff from there about history and science and life. And worth mentioning also, like, grief and how that gets processed. And so there's that element of it, too. It's a passion project. A lot of friends and loved ones helped me with it. There's a link to bisonemojipodcast.com in the footnotes of the show. That's the website for it where you can find out all about it. So that mini-series called One Way to Make an Emoji, that's available on your podcast player right now. All four episodes are there. And I hope you'll check it out if you've got, like, the room to do it. And with all that said, we have a super fun cracked podcast for you. Coming right now. Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast, the podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt. I'm also known as Schmitty the Clam. I'm also known as Schmitty the Champ. And I am also thrilled about my guest today. Our guest is a returning guest of this show. His name is Andy Daly, one of the funniest people in just all of comedy, all of the podcasting and writing and acting and everything else. Andy Daly has almost too many credits to name, so I'm going to stick to three of them because they are breaking very exciting things. Andy's new album is entitled Four More Sweaters, Monsters Take Your Questions. His previous album was called Nine Sweaters. The sweater there in the title construct, it means a new character. Every track he is a new, amazing, often kind of depraved character, and it's the best. I highly recommend it. Second of three credits here is the TV show Review, which you gotta see it. It is off the air now. It also very recently came out on DVD for the first time, so you can finally get home media of it, which was a thing that was like really demanded by a lot of us, and it took a long time, and now it's here. But on Review, Andy plays Forrest McNeil, a man reviewing every experience. If you have not seen Pancakes Divorce Pancakes, I don't know if I'd recommend starting there because it's so intense. Also, it's amazing, but any episode's good. And credit number three is our springboard into the topic of today's episode, because Andy has a new podcast out along with Matt Gourley and Maria Bamford. It is entitled Bonanas for Bonanza. And the title there is referring to Bonanza, a very, very, very long-running TV show. As we'll discuss on the episode, Andy is playing one of his characters named Dalton Wilcox, who is a cowboy poet laureate of the West and is also a monster hunter and perhaps a serial murderer as he does that. Dalton Wilcox is an amazing character who Andy Daly has done on Comedy Bang Bang and on the Andy Daly podcast pilot project. And one of Andy's pilots there is Bonanas for Bonanza, which is an extremely funny premise for a podcast because it's a TV rewatch type podcast where each episode is about a different episode of TV. And it's one of the most impossible ones you could do because Bonanza is an old Western cowboy adventure show that ran from 1959 to 1973. And it ran for 431 episodes. That is a lot of television. Almost everything you watch has not been on that long. So part of the humor there is the idea that Dalton Wilcox, a cowboy poet, who again is a monster hunter but really a murderer, the idea that he would review all 431 episodes of Bonanza is crazy. And it's part of the magic of this new podcast that you should definitely check out. It's great. And the topic of this podcast right here today is bizarre moments from bizarrely long-running TV shows. One more time, that is bizarre moments from bizarrely long-running TV shows. It's very, very hard for any TV show to run, you know, even a couple seasons, let alone 100 episodes or something like that. The shortest-running TV show we will talk about today lasted 187 episodes. The rest of them ran 200, but often more like 300, 400, and in a couple cases, more than 500 episodes long, even though they are shows that you probably do not think about today. There was a great recent piece on a site called unnamedtemporarysportsblog.com, some former Deadspin folks, where they talked about how Game of Thrones used to be sort of all of pop culture for several years, and then suddenly it's just kind of off the map. It's not something anybody thinks about anymore. These shows are a more extreme version of that, where they were smash hit shows for literal decades, and now they are not really such a thing anymore. So in this podcast, we're going to look at those surprisingly long-running shows and a particularly weird moment or two from each of them that would be a pretty insane moment to televise at all, and yet you will hear audio from the clips of them happening. So we are straight up having fun today with one of the funniest people around. Let's let you hear it. Please sit back or sit with your copy of Dalton Wilcox's book of poetry that is entitled You Must Buy Your Wife At Least As Much Jewelry As You Buy Your Horse and Other Poems and Observations, Humorous and Otherwise from a Life on the Range. And either way, here's this episode of the Cracked Podcast with Andy Daly. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. One great thing to start with is, since we're talking about long-running TV shows, describe Bonanza to the average listener who has never seen it, never heard of it, doesn't know it.
Bonanza was a Western television show that premiered in 1959, and it took place in 1859. So it was a 100-year look into the past, and it ran until 1973. during that time, only one of the four core cast members died.
Pretty good.
Yeah, not a bad record. But that's how many years? 14 years during which they made 431 episodes of television. And the premise is that it's this dad, played by Lorne Greene, who, when they shot the pilot, was 44 years old but looked 70. And he's raising, well, he's got three grown sons who are all have three different mothers, all of whom died. This somehow Lorne Greene killed. You know, he buried three wives. It's sort of made clear that because these men have different mothers, they have different personalities. It's a little confused about genetics, I would say. That because the one guy, Michael Landon's character, his mother was a New Orleans Creole, that's what he is. Doesn't really make sense. But anyway, yeah, it's the three of them living out on a giant ranch in around the Lake Tahoe area, the border of California and Nevada. And they are jealously guarding their massive acreage from gold prospectors who give the show its name, Bonanza. And they're just having constant problems with gold prospectors and the native peoples of the land. And God knows what, over 431 episodes, what kind of problems they're going to encounter. But it's going to be a lot.
Ray, because your character on the show has, of course, seen all of it. I'm curious how much of Bonanza you have seen out of the 431.
Well, it's funny. Matt Gourley and I were just doing another interview yesterday to promote our podcast, Bananas for Bonanza. And the host asked us, like, how into Bonanza were you? And I said that I had never seen an episode before doing this podcast, which is true.
Yeah.
Never. I mean, I was familiar with it, and I knew that it had something to do with the Ponderosa Steakhouse, which was a thing I'd seen commercials for, but I had never seen it. And Matt was shocked because it actually means something to Matt Gourley.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He watched it a lot as a kid. I don't think it was on for, but to be honest with you, even if it was on, I feel like I might not have watched it. Like, I don't think I watched any dramas. I don't think I watched any hour-long shows as a kid. I'd watch The Munsters and I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched and game shows and cartoons, of course. But I don't think you could have got me to sit down for Bonanza as a child.
We look back on pre-Netflix and we're like, ah, we only had, you know, whatever was airing on the specific channels at the specific times. But like, even then, that was dozens of options. Like, there were a lot of shows I just did not watch. Like, it was pretty robust.
Yeah, I think about it all the time because I've got two young kids now. But, you know, on a Saturday, we used to just park ourselves in front of the TV for whatever, 3 or 4 hours. But then at that point, the TV became unwatchable because it was car racing and golf and war movies, World War II movies. And you pretty much had no choice but to go outside.
Yeah, because Bonanza to me, I think I knew it like I knew a couple of the shows we'll talk about here where I only knew it for its long runningness. That's part of the fun of the show you're doing is that the idea of them recapping all of these episodes is exhausting sounding.
Yeah, Dalton Wilcox believes that they are going to be able to review all 431 episodes. In reality, this is an 8-episode season. Dalton just is not aware of that.
Yeah. In the show universe, it sounds like you guys told him that, and he just refused to believe it, which is great.
didn't take it in. It didn't get in there.
Yeah, and we've got a few shows here, because Bonanza is famous for being a long-running Western, and then the other one that's maybe even longer running and maybe even as famous for its long-runningness is Gunsmoke. And that's the one I'd heard of, especially if you're a Simpsons fan. That's the one that the show was behind until The Simpsons overtook it in, I think, 2018 to be the longest-running primetime U.S. show.
Yeah, so when I had the idea that Dalton Wilcox would host a, you know, West Wing Weekly type show where he would, you know, recap and discuss episodes of a TV show, the first show I did think of was actually Gunsmoke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I watched the pilot episode of Gunsmoke, but it was really good. And I thought it was too good. I was like, I don't think it's going to be fun to goof on this show. It's like a high quality and entertaining Western show. So then I went over and watched Bonanza and I said, oh, this will do just fine.
Speaking of the 431 episodes of Bonanza, with the Gunsmoke pilot, is it gritty feeling? Because it seems like Bonanza, part of the pull when they premiered it was that Bonanza was in color and wow. And then Gunsmoke was this black and white show for most of its early run. But it ran from 1955 to 1975, 20 seasons, which is a long time. But I guess the first chunk of it was black and white, which maybe was more of a like hardcore sort of decision. I don't know.
Yeah, and one thing that we've learned in looking into all these shows is that part of the reason they were able to last so long is that the scripts for these shows were often written for other shows. There were lots of Western shows around, so a lot of the time these were like rejected movie scripts or rejected scripts from other Westerns that writers would just sort of polish off and hand over to Gunsmoke because they were buying scripts. It's an interesting recipe for longevity.
So yeah, Gunsmoke, until The Simpsons caught it in April 2018, Gunsmoke, 20 seasons, 635 episodes, and 5 TV movies, was the longest-running primetime series of all time. And the weird moment we've got here is from the pilot that was aired for Gunsmoke, and I'm going to play it here in a sec. The people running Gunsmoke, and I guess setting it up, they cast an actor named Jim Arness to play the main character, whose name is Matt Dillon, even though that's confusing because that's an actor now. Jim Arness was playing this main character, and the rumor is they tried to get John Wayne in the first place. And whether or not that is what happened, what ended up happening is when they aired the Gunsmoke pilot, this clip was presented to people as like the opening of it. You're about to hear the voice of John Wayne.
Good evening. My name's Wayne. Some of you may have seen me before. I hope so. I've been kicking around Hollywood a long time. I've made a lot of pictures out here, all kinds. And some of them have been Westerns. And that's what I'm here to tell you about tonight, a Western. A new television show called Gunsmoke. No, I'm not in it. I wish I were, though, because I think it's the best thing of its kind that's come along. And I hope you'll agree with me. It's honest, it's adult, it's realistic. When I first heard about the show Gunsmoke, I knew there was only one man to play in it, James Arness. He's a young fella and maybe new to some of you, but I've worked with him and I predict he'll be a big star. So you might as well get used to him like you've had to get used to me. And now I'm proud to present my friend Jim Arness in Gunsmoke.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, so this is a show where you have like a Western show and there's a John Wayne type character. And so for the pilot, they opened with John Wayne saying, please give this guy who's not me a chance. Please watch Gunsmoke, which will eventually be the longest running show of all time. Please check it out.
And John Wayne is in costume as a Western character on a Western set. I think people could be forgiven for thinking, oh, John Wayne's in this. Why would he get in wardrobe otherwise? But no, he just got in wardrobe to tell you, psych, I'm not in this, and I never will be. But I got to tell you, it had the desired effect on me when I watched it. I like those descriptors.
Yeah.
It's adult. Who says that? This show is adult, and it's serious. And I really did watch the episode through that lens, I have to say. I took him seriously when I was like, okay, I'm going to give this my undivided attention. John Wayne says it's particularly good.
Well, how about that? Yeah. When you watched the pilot, this was tacked onto it. It wasn't like chopped off in the version you saw.
No, it was. I watched the pilot on YouTube and there it was. And I was convinced, even though I did think it was quite strange. And I thought there was a pretty decent chance that John Wayne was half drunk.
Well,
take that, particularly in the beginning.
There's a deliberateness to his pronunciation of his words that seems like he's struggling.
I wonder if Americans at the time just sort of felt like John Wayne was always in the West, you know? Like, he's not just acting. Like, they kind of, like, a lot of his movies are them just kind of catching him in between Western activities.
Yeah. Right. That's true. It would be weird to see him without a kerchief around his neck.
The show obviously worked out. It was also, it was based on a radio show where the actor William Conrad played Marshal Matt Dillon. But then apparently the TV producers wanted a skinnier man to play the TV version. And so they cast Jim Arness. But also John Wayne was like about to do the movie The Searchers the next year. He was a massive star. They clearly wanted a John Wayne type, but they couldn't get actual John Wayne. Still weird to me to be like, here's the guy we wanted to tell you that the guy we ended up with is good. Really wild.
That would be crazy. That's probably the only time that that has ever happened, that a show has opened with, hi, hey, I'm Will Arnett. They offered me this role, and I was not interested. I am too big a star. But here, enjoy this up-and-comer. I think he's great.
And then from there, we got what is now the second longest running show of all time, because The Simpsons is at 683 episodes as of this taping. And then moving slightly down the list to the third longest running primetime U.S. show, Lassie. Good old Lassie ran from 1954 to 1973, 19 seasons, 591 episodes of a show that I had heard of Lassie as a kid, and I knew it as like a trope that relatives would reference. I had no idea it was like a tentpole of television for 20 years. It's amazing.
Yeah, me neither. That seems like a very limited concept to milk for that long.
Yeah.
I wonder if it bothered anybody that there is no way a collie could live 19 years. it wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, or, I mean, obviously different dogs played Lassie over the years, but even in the fictional world where this is Lassie, it wouldn't happen.
Especially because Lassie begins as an adult. It's not like Lassie is born and that's the pilot.
Right. So that's like an 18-month-old dog at least in season one.
And weirdly, just looking into this, like Lassie is also just one of the longest running entertainment properties of the 20th century. There was a novelist named Eric Knight who created Lassie in a short story and then a novel called Lassie Come Home in 1940. And then MGM made 7 movies about Lassie. Hmm. Also, 2 different radio shows were attempted. And I assume the problem was you can't see the dog. So it's just like not as appealing of a product.
Yeah. Get on the phone with sometime and have them describe their dog to you. You don't want that. Well, I'm shocked that Lassie was that much of a money-making franchise for the entertainment world. Now it makes me feel like I have to check out, like, what was going on there? What was so appealing?
Yeah, I think people, like, just wanted to see a dog have a nice time, and that was enough for them. A few months back, we did an episode where we touched on the singing cowboy phenomenon, and so when John Wayne was talking about a Western being adult, he probably meant there's no singing and rope tricks. Like, it's just killing and toughness, you know? But also there were a lot of like movie star horses and dogs in early cinema. Apparently that was like sort of a forerunner to people in a lot of cases.
They'd work longer hours without complaining. I always thought that Lassie was like a blatant ripoff of Rin Tin Tin, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess Lassie was more successful than Rin Tin Tin.
Yeah, Lassie was just this massive hit. In the run of Lassie, when we were talking about, you'd have to get a new dog, obviously. They never got a new dog officially. Obviously, there were multiple dogs filming. But Lassie had a bunch of...
They never admitted that they were recasting Lassie?
Yeah, they never, like, told anybody, I guess.
Ridiculous.
But also, Lassie had a lot of different human families. There was turnover with that constantly. Because the trope the one trope I would hear, like, relatives talk about with Lassie is that, like, Timmy is in a well and Lassie's barking, like, alerts them. That was all I knew about Lassie at all. I don't know about you.
What's that, Lassie?
Yes.
Timmy's stuck in the well? That's it. That line right there. I don't know where that came from. Where did that line come from? I don't know. But that is, that's my first association with Lassie for sure.
And so one of our bizarre things here is that never happened in the show. Timmy never got stuck in a well. So the one thing I ever knew about it is like sort of a myth. It was never actually a thing.
That's so funny because that must have been some like a stand-up comic, like getting some like reference comedy applause from a baby boomer audience saying, what's that Lassie, Timmy stuck in the well? So people recognize that as something that the kind of thing that might happen on Lassie, even though weirdly enough, it never did happen.
Yeah, and especially because, so with the turnover of people, Timmy was not the original child. That when the show started, there was a farm boy named Jeff Miller and his family. And then in the fourth season, in one of the episodes, they find a tattered runaway who is Timmy and rescue Timmy. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, and then what happens, and it's sort of unclear exactly how, but another family, the Martin family, comes and buys the Miller family farm and adopts Lassie and adopts Timmy, but the Millers leave. So Jeff is done. We have Jeff for a few seasons, then he's done, and now Timmy is the boy for Lassie, only starting from like season 5.
How strange.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm starting to wonder if in the mythology of this show, Lassie is immortal and, of course, is just cycling through owners over the centuries. And so this is like not a big deal. You know, this family goes, another one comes in, you know, Lassie's used
right,
to
Lassie
it.
Is Dr. Manhattan, like just observing the Earth dispassionately as events, you know, unfold.
Yeah. But that makes me think, too, of Land of the Lost when they, the father, you know, Marshall, Will, and Holly, so it was Marshall, the dad, asked for more money. He asked for a bigger cut of the merchandising, and they said, no, you can leave. And they just had him disappear and their uncle show up and just carried on as before. So it's like, you're all recastable. This entire family, it's about the dog. It doesn't matter who the dog is with.
It's the Miller family and then the Martin family, but with Timmy. That was the first 10 years or so. And then after that, Lassie lives with a team of U.S. Forest Service rangers. So there's no children. Lassie's with, like, park rangers dealing with the woods. And then Lassie, for about a season, traveled solo and just met new people every episode and dealt with them, which I didn't know a dog could do. And then it ends with Lassie living on a ranch with the family and staff there. So, yeah, Lassie's just moving from situation to situation all the time, and nobody talks about it.
Yeah. That's fine. That is really them saying, like, you humans are completely expendable. This is a show about a dog.
Right. There was a child actor named John Provost who played Timmy from the specific seasons were 1957 to 1964. And his memoir as a person is called Timmy's in the Well, in an ironic way, because apparently Timmy never fell in the well. And he says that Timmy fell into abandoned mine shafts, off of cliffs, into rivers, into lakes, and into quicksand, but never a well in any of the many years of Timmy being in the show.
What ever happened to quicksand? That was a major threat for a long time in films and television. I haven't heard about quicksand in years. Is it a real thing and the world just solved the problem of quicksand? Nobody ever gets stuck in it anymore. Nobody ever is ever like, throw me that vine. Right.
Yeah, pop culture really taught me dogs would rescue people from quicksand, even though dogs don't do that and there's no quicksand. It's crazy. And then also the other weird thing with Timmy never falling in a well is there is one episode of Lassie, and this is in the Jeff years early on, when Lassie pushes a guy into a well, and we've got a clip of it. It's a good time.
Yes.
This is season 1, episode 24. The episode is called The Well. A greedy businessman wants to take the groundwater from the Miller family farm. And then Jeff, because not Timmy, he's not in the show yet. Jeff comes and tries to stop him. The businessman is mean. And then, folks, you will hear Lassie shove this businessman into his well. Here we go.
You better get out of here before my gramps catches you.
Go on home, kid.
You got no right here.
I said beat it.
You can't put that here.
Heslin, I'm lowering a branch down to you. Grab it.
I can't see. I can't see.
Reach for it.
I've got it.
All right, now hang on. Now look, Heslin, I can't pull you out with this branch. It's dead wood and it'll break if I try to. You know where to get a rope, son?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Get me out of here. It's freezing cold.
All right, hang on. We're going to get you out somehow.
Do you have a pencil or a piece of paper?
Pencil and paper? Yeah, in my inside pocket.
Thunder! You're getting hot!
Just hang on!
Thunder!
We're sending for help.
It's freezing cold!
Hurry up, son.
Here, Lassie, take it to Gramps.
Yeah, don't mess with that dog.
Yeah. And then the man is really crying out about how cold the water is down there. He's probably pretty badly hurt. And Lassie just like attacked him in the show.
Yeah, he sounds like he's in bad shape down there. Yeah. And Lassie knew exactly what she was doing. That wasn't just a like a, hey, back off. That was a, I am stuffing you down this hole in the ground. And I'm making sure you're in there. She like tramples on him, making sure he goes down that hole. That was premeditated and fully intentional and disproportionate to what the man just shoved the boy. You know, it was just a push. It was just a back off. You know, I mean, not cool, but not the kind of thing you murder a man for.
Yeah, in many ways, Lassie, a forerunner of Dalton Wilcox in the, you know, just going ahead and murdering people.
In many ways, and of course also that's a hole in the ground, and Dalton Wilcox has a history with those as well. This is very Dalton-friendly content.
Folks, we'll have links about his poetry and habits in the show. The other weird Lassie clip we've got here is coming from season 4 of the show, because Lassie was a show that for its entire run was sponsored by the Campbell's Soup Company. Still going today. But a lot of the run of the show was basically designed to sell soup. And so you're about to hear a clip of Jeff, we're still in the Jeff years, the young boy Jeff, who's Lassie's friend, talking to his uncle Petrie, who is going to give him a ring with Lassie's face on it. So here we go.
I'm sorry, Uncle Petrie. I guess I was just dumb.
Well, now, it ain't a question of being dumb or smart, Timmy. It's like my old grandpappy used to say, half the people don't mean what they say, the other half don't say what they mean. But bygones are bygones. And since you and me are friends now, I got something for you to cement our friendship. Lassie and me made it last night. Come on over, girl. You got to be in on the presentation. There, now, give me your right hand. This here is a friendship ring. It means that you and me and Lassie are friends from now on.
It's got a picture of Lassie on it.
Yep.
Look, Mom, look at Lassie on my ring.
Oh, it's beautiful, dear.
Look, Dad.
Well, just wait till the kids at school see this.
This show was weirdly full of stuff like that, because there was this thing where if you liked the Lassie ring, and also in the scene, Uncle Petrie is like, me and Lassie made this ring, which I'm sure is sort of talking to a child, but also it feels like they were forging a ring together, like an old man and a dog. It's really weird to me.
I know. Well, with everything that Lassie is capable of, yeah, it does seem like that probably did happen. Come here, Lassie. Fire up the coals.
They both put on like different shaped welding masks and then just get to it.
Specially designed dog welding mask. I love to. It's the moment where the dad goes, wait till the kids at school get a look at this, that I smell a rat. That's the moment that sounds like a commercial.
We're drawn on a book called Lassie, A Dog's Life, The First 50 Years by Ace Collins. He claims that this Campbell's deal where if you sent in a Swanson's frozen dinner label and 25 cents, you receive a Lassie ring. Apparently, Campbell's shipped over 77,000 rings in the course of that promotion. So a lot of sales there. And then they also had a deal where you could get a wallet made of what was described as rich brown plastic. It's just so 50s to me. I love it.
Rich brown plastic.
Precisely. Yeah. Oh. If you sent in 5 Campbell's soup labels, you could get a Lassie Get Up and Go Club rich brown plastic wallet. And according to the book, Campbell's shipped over 1.34 million wallets, which represents over 6.7 million cans of soup in the process of this.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm sure if I go to eBay, I can find one of those rich brown wallets. Although, I don't know. Maybe that doesn't sound like it was built to last. The ring might be
It's a
there,
weird
though.
Thing where we'll have a, assuming nobody sells it between when we're taping and when this airs, we'll have a link to a worthpoint.com page where somebody is selling a Lassie wallet with the membership card included and everything. Because the Lassie Get Up and Go Club was designed around being a big fan of soup and also Lassie. And so this was this was a product they were like selling through the show and selling a ton of. I get like they would just detour for these weird Campbell's soup products. It's great.
Market research shows us that the overlap between Soup fans and Lassie fans is enormous. This is a winner, boys.
I would watch Nick at Night as a kid and think, like, okay, so people watching TV back in the day, like I Love Lucy and I Dream of Jeannie and Brady Bunch and all these other shows. And then apparently also there was this massive Lassie audience eating soup constantly in the background. I had no idea about it. And people never talked about it.
Nobody ever talked about Lassie and soup. Netflix and chill? Heard of that. Lassie and soup? That's new to me.
And now that you say it, maybe it's an angle. Folks, stay socially distant, but, you know, if you got your eye on somebody.
Want a Lassie and soup tonight?
We have more TV moments involving dogs specifically from here, because jumping much closer to the present day, we have the show One Tree Hill. Good old One Tree Hill. And this is a show, it aired from 2003 to 2012, 9 seasons, 187 episodes, and that's the fewest episodes of anything we're talking about today.
That's a lot for a show that I feel like I've barely heard of, and I was alive for all of those years. That one just escaped my notice.
Yeah, it's one of the shows that was like a big hit on the WB and then carried over to the CW, if people remember that network change. I also like wanted to know what One Tree Hill is. It's set in a fictional North Carolina town called Tree Hill. And so the title is implying like, there's only one Tree Hill, you know? So I've been saying it wrong this whole time, emphasis-wise. But it's people being like, our high school years in Tree Hill. That was it. That was the thing.
Oh, yeah. You never really go back to Tree Hill.
It's mainly about two half-brothers who are Lucas and Nathan Scott. And one of those guys is Chad Michael Murray, if people know that actor. But they're competing for the high school basketball team and for love. And they're half-brothers, and then they share a dad who's very villainous. And that's their story. You're about to hear the audio of all 30 seconds of an incredibly weird situation, and then we will tell you what's going on, because it's pretty wordless. So here we go.
524. Dr. Casper to the ER. Dr. Casper to the ER. Nurse Henderson to admitting. Nurse Henderson to admitting.
Okay, and so what you just heard, I don't know, Andy, if you want to give him the broad strokes, or I can, but it was quite a moment.
Look, it's one of the best pieces of television I've ever seen in my life. It just 100% works. Look, I don't know what leads up to this, but it's a tense moment in a hospital, like in a waiting room at a hospital. A guy, an orderly of some kind, or an EMS guy, runs in with one of those coolers, one of those little handheld coolers, and he trips and out spills a whole bunch of ice, which plays immediately to me like prop ice. This is not real ice. It doesn't bounce like real ice. And a human heart, which is obviously not a prop. That's a real human heart that the show got their hands on. No. But it tumbles out onto the floor, and everybody reacts not like you would react in a situation like that, but they take note of it. And then a golden retriever who's hanging out in the hospital lobby for whatever reason, slowly makes his way over to the heart. There's plenty of time to stop him or to say something or to go, no, 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 no. Everybody just watches this happen. And it's not like the dog pounces on it like there was no chance. And the dog even takes it into its mouth sort of tentatively, like, a half bite. Right. And everybody's just like, wow, there goes a human heart slowly, eventually, into the stomach of a dog. And then there's a moment between two characters where they just kind of look at each other. One of them is in a hospital gown, and he's like, whoa. Presumably, that's the guy that needed the heart. And the other one is kind of looking at the other guy like, you idiot. I don't know. What's in that look? It's hard to interpret what's in the look from the other guy, the tough guy. Is he wearing a leather jacket? Stubble on his face like, told you a dog was going to eat your new heart.
Kind of how it looks.
But I'll tell you my favorite part about it, because this is, contrary to what I was saying before, I was being sarcastic. This does not work on any level.
What?
Like, they needed to have done 10 more takes to get this even close to being a moment that anybody could buy or appreciate on a non-ironic level. But in the middle of this complete disaster of a scene, the director's name comes up. The poor guy. It just feels like the editor's going, if you want to know whose fault this was,
It was the guy who only left time for one take of the scene where the dog eats the heart.
Because also, this is at the beginning of the episode, which is why there are still people's names, like the director, coming up as credits.
That's why credits.
They open an episode with... And you're right, it is the villainous dad character in a hospital gown. And apparently for at least several episodes, they've been building up to, he needs a heart. He needs a heart transplant really badly. The other character is one of the half-brothers. It's his son, played by Chad Michael Murray.
Okay, they don't, but by the way, they look like they could be brothers.
Yeah.
Just in this scene, I'm surprised to hear that one of them is the father.
I agree. So it's just a situation where the heart falls out of the cooler. It gets eaten by a dog, as you said, very slowly, very polite dog. And then both of their reactions to it are confusing. I recommend that other people, if you have time, go check out this clip, because we can only tell you about it, and it's magical.
Yeah, it's very hard to interpret those faces. What was the direction? What were they told was going on internally as the dog checked out, considered, thought about, started to eat this heart? And the guy who dropped it, by the way, is content to just lie there on his face on the floor like, oh, wow, this is that dog. Look, a dog. Oh, wow.
I'm glad you gave him Owen Wilson's voice. That's really fun to me.
That dog's going to eat that heart.
As far as what's going through the characters' heads, the website The Ringer did an entire oral history of this 30-second clip of One Tree Hill that doesn't make any sense. They were not able to talk to actor Chad Michael Murray, who has the strangest reaction to this, but they talked to someone who was on set, and they said, quote, "I remember Chad that day going, 'What do I do?' I said, 'You read it. What do you think?' He goes, 'I can't fucking believe this is happening.' And I said, 'That's exactly how you have to react.' And that's the reaction I got out of him."
That was the director saying that?
Yeah, I believe it's the director. And I'm pretty sure Chad Michael Murray, when Chad Michael Murray said, "I can't fucking believe this is happening," he was speaking as like an actor being forced to do this scene and not like what his character is thinking. But it sounds like the director was like, "Exactly, your character can't believe what is happening." And then, and then they taped it.
"I'm questioning all my life choices."
"Exactly. Go." "I'm mad at everyone here right now." "Yes, they let the heart fall. Precisely. Good job."
"Go with that."
The other great exchange in the oral history is, it's just two lines back to back, and they did this in a very funny way. It's the actor who played the dad saying, "Why couldn't this happen? Why not?" And then the next line in the oral history is from Eugene Storozynski, MD, PhD, director of cardio-oncology clinic, University of Rochester Medical Center. And this doctor says, "I mean, there would be absolutely no way that a cat or a dog or any other animal would ever be found inside a hospital."
Oh, really?
I believe you're not allowed to bring them in, unless it's like a service animal or something. And the dog didn't seem to be in the scene.
I would think, yeah, golden retrievers can be service animals, and that didn't bump me as much as everything else in the scene. It is odd. It's odd that there happens to be a dog standing by where the heart falls on the floor. But it's really, that's a minor problem.
We got just a few more TV moments. Let's get into them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is coming from Dallas, 1978 to 1991. Dallas aired for 14 seasons and 357 episodes. And then there was also a revival in 2012 that ran 40 more. So it's a very, very, very long-running show.
Really?
They did close to 400 episodes of Dallas, all told. And yeah, Dallas is about the feuding Ewing family and their oil money. And the weirdest moment of Dallas is the series finale, at least for the main series, not the revival, because it's a situation where the final episode, they have this character, J.R. Ewing, who's hated, right? Like, nobody likes J.R. Ewing. There was a famous thing where he got shot, and then The Simpsons did a version of it. Mm. In the final episode, they do basically an It's a Wonderful Life kind of thing, where a spirit comes to him to try to convince him that his life is worth living. And then there is a turn where the spirit turns out to be a demon who wants him to off himself. And that is how the entire series ends, is the question of, did he off himself or not?
Oh, they don't even answer it?
Well, first, let's let people hear a little bit of it.
Okay.
You'll hear about 40 seconds here of the final scene of all of the series of Dallas. It's JR being talked to by a spirit while his brother Bobby tries to come up and see him. So here we go.
Do it!
Oh,
Wow. I am lost watching that clip. You explained it, but I don't understand it. Is it a dream?
It's happening in real life. And I think also just this final episode, they introduce like the supernatural into Dallas where they hadn't really had it before, you know, because like It's a Wonderful Life. There's an angel because this is one movie where there's the supernatural.
It starts. It starts with angels. That movie begins with angels. But this is a show that for many years never had any angels or demons. And now all of a sudden in the final episode, they go, oh, yeah, there's angels and demons. And JR is communicating with them in his waking life.
Suddenly, you folks will see it if you look at the clip. The spirit is suddenly wearing an all red suit and appearing in a mirror, being a very Twin Peaks type character, telling him to shoot himself in the head.
Wow.
The entire series, episode 357, ends on Bobby reacting in shock to an off-screen gunshot. And that's just it. That's all we get.
Wow. I think he must have killed himself, because what would be the point of shooting a demon, you know?
You are correct. And 5 years later, they did a Dallas TV movie where it turns out basically he shot the demon instead of himself, just kind of for no reason. And so the TV movie tells people that JR shot the mirror that the demon was appearing in instead of himself. And so also Bobby running into a room after a gunshot saying, oh, my God, was, I guess, just a reaction to like a mirror being broken.
Oh, yeah. That might have been a real old, expensive mirror.
Yeah.
He might have known that mirror all his life and had a long, troubled relationship with that mirror, but ultimately loved it.
Like, I have heard of Dallas, and I know it's about all these various shenanigans and especially JR getting shot, but I had never heard that they had people watch more than 350 episodes, and then they just ended like darkly and then also kind of gaslit people later and were like, no, actually, he was just goofing around. Here's a TV movie.
I wonder if that was one of those shows where by the time they got around to the series finale, kind of nobody was really watching anymore. Was it that kind of vibe?
With any of them, it's that tough writing challenge of you don't exactly know if you're going to keep going or not. And then you have usually kind of short notice to wrap it or not when you find out.
Oh, that might have been maybe that was a cliff. That was intended to be a cliffhanger and they got canceled. Maybe. And then the whole next season was going to be all about angels and demons. Who knows? Let's give them the maximum benefit of the doubt.
And we have two more shows here, and one of them is ER, which did kind of a spooky thing. There's no explicit supernatural element to it, but ER ran for 15 seasons, 331 episodes, and until Grey's Anatomy passed it in 2019, it was the longest-running U.S. medical drama in primetime ever. And, you know, a very popular show. George Clooney was on it and stuff. But there's one episode of ER where they basically Final Destination a guy with a helicopter. And we're not going to play you any audio because it's all just loud helicopter noises and screaming. It's not useful to you as a listener. But it's a pretty weird and dark series of events that they just plug in and kill off a character with. For listeners' context, this is a situation where there's a character named Dr. Robert Romano, who in the start of season 9 of ER loses an arm to a helicopter blade. But then they keep him in the show because they give him a robotic arm that apparently is so advanced he can do very difficult surgeries with it.
Wow.
And then in season 10, just a random episode, he refuses to go out of an elevator on the roof because there's a helicopter there and it's very triggering for him.
Yes, he's having a flashback, a PTSD flashback of losing his arm to a helicopter.
Yeah.
So far, this all makes sense.
Which is an incredibly reasonable fear trauma. Like, sure. And then he runs all the way down to the ground to, like, get some air and is out on the street. And this helicopter crashes all the way down the building and lands on top of him and kills him.
Yes!
And that's just their medical drama. That's what they're doing.
But even before he is killed, isn't there all this stuff where it's like, who's going to get on this helicopter, me or you? And the one woman who is told, you're not getting on the helicopter. It's not her flight. She's off. She ends up being killed in the crash. Because the elevator won't close? Is that what happens there? So it's a double Final Destination.
I think some shrapnel hits another person next to the lady who doesn't get on.
Oh, I see.
Folks, we'll have the clip linked for you. It's pretty hard to follow. There's a lot of, like, just pure carnage for, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was just in the middle of their medical show about trying to save lives and fall in love and stuff.
And a massive explosion that, like, takes out the whole floor of the hospital. That was overkill. That didn't have to happen. But that must have been a season-ender cliffhanger, right? Where you're like, I don't know how many people survived on that floor of the hospital.
So it was season 10, episode 8. I was just in the middle of the season. And they just kind of did that. And I don't know if the actor needed to leave the show.
You know what's funny? Believe it or not, I did an episode of a show called Major Crimes that was directed by that actor who is crushed by the helicopter.
Oh.
And in just sitting around chatting on the set one day, he told me about the experience. And I had never seen that episode. I didn't know how they wrote him out. But he told me about the experience of being written off of a long-running show and that he was called into the showrunner's office and they just kind of explained to him that this was going to happen. And he had to make a decision in that moment to, like, beg for his job or be angry. He said that he knew right away that the best thing to do was to be grateful and to thank these guys and to say this show changed my life. It kept me in town. I was here to see my kids grow up. I learned how to direct on this set and just thank you. And he said that it was just a split second important decision he had to make in his life. So I got a little behind the scenes story of that episode. So now it's blowing my mind to see the way that they sent him out. It's crazy. Getting crushed by a helicopter. And I think his character could have run. He had a moment where instead of hitting the dirt and screaming into the ground, he could have tried some evasive action.
Yeah, this is the actor Paul McCrane, who's a very able-bodied person, and his character in the show, I'm sure, could have just, like, fled or something. But yeah, he just sort of screams as he watches the burning wrecked helicopter fall on top of him.
Yeah, there's a moment of like, I always knew it was going to happen this way. I always knew helicopters weren't done with me.
Right, even to write a doctor whose enemy is helicopters is really wild and fun to me. I really like it.
Yeah, if I run, that helicopter might take my leg. Why should I let helicopters chop me up one piece at a time? Let's end this.
That's such a wonderful story about him seeing it as a positive thing. Because also it seems like the character was a really major character for several seasons. And so this was a big deal to ER fans. It's very nice that he could take it okay in the moment.
Yeah, I think he was surprised. I would have to think on a show like that where they're constantly creating drama and you know, killing people off and having dramatic things happen to people, you kind of have to get every script going, is this it? Is this the one? But then if it's episode 8, you weren't expecting it on episode 8. Of the season.
Yeah, out of nowhere. Yeah. I've seen all of Grey's Anatomy, and I really enjoy it. And there's like a famous plane crash that they put a bunch of the characters through. It's a pretty divisive among fans, and a lot of people kind of stopped watching at that point because it was a really just hard thing to watch. But they did it at the end of the season because, like, that's what you cliffhang on is a plane has crashed and who will survive and who will not, you know?
Yeah.
ER was just like, helicopter time, let's go. It's Tuesday or whatever.
And I remember a lot of ER promos that would talk about, they would say, one of their own, you know, tragedy comes for one of their own. This was definitely one of those.
Another Grey's thing is them being like extra shocked whenever one of the doctors is sick. Like, I think there's a small feeling among them of like, wait, a doctor can catch a disease or have a tumor or something? What? Like, that's for civilians. What?
Yeah. Right. I also do not remember. I watched ER. I watched it when it was on. I liked it, but I have not looked back on it in a long time. And it's funny to me how phony the set is. Like when he goes outside of the hospital, like that is quite clearly on a lot. That is not exterior of anything.
I feel like there are just so many TV shows making so many episodes all the time that it's very easy for these things to slip through the cracks or people don't come back to them and notice them. And I don't know. It just the quantity of it is wild. Like we've all seen the same 9 Star Wars movies a billion times, but TV shows, you know.
Yeah.
The volume.
I know.
One last show we have here, Little House on the Prairie, ran for 9 seasons and 204 episodes plus 4 specials. Cast included Michael Landon. Hey, how about that?
Love it.
Of a bonanza fame.
Exactly.
And this is coming from the very finale of the series, basically. It's one of the specials that they made afterward. It turns out that, because Little House on the Prairie, it's based on these Laura Ingalls Wilder books. You think of it as very pastoral, very like turn of the century, very, very homey. And then they ended the show with the residents of the town, which was called Walnut Grove. They end it with the residents all violently demolishing their town with huge explosions. And we don't have a, like, true clip of it, but we will have linked a clip that somebody put on YouTube where they took the footage and they set it to Sabotage by the Beastie Boys.
Oh, cool.
So we don't have, like, access to the regular thing, but you can see the explosions there. It's really exciting. it's not a wrecking ball or something gentle. Like it's all of the dynamite they could find demolishing these huge like Victorian homes.
It's bizarre. Why? Why did they blow up their town? Did it have the smallpox or something?
They were doing a special, like it was called The Last Farewell was the name of the special. This was a 1984 TV movie. And the Little House on the Prairie characters learn at the beginning of the special that a railroad tycoon actually holds the deed to the whole town. Like he owns all of the land somehow.
And that's been true throughout the entire life of the series? Has that been the case and they just didn't know it?
Yeah, presumably the entire time. Yeah, they were just squatters. So that's kind of dark on its own.
Yeah, that's funny.
And so from there, the characters spend the whole special trying to like change this over or get their land back or do something about it. And every time they fail. And so at the end of it, they all agree to all blow up their own homes so the railroad tycoon does not get to have them. Wow. And that's how the show ends. That's how they wrap it up.
Wow. That's nuts.
With a bunch of like cartoon character plunger dynamite things, you know, with the handle where you press it down. Like a bunch of them taking turns blowing up their homes and businesses and stuff. Because if they can't have it, nobody can.
Well, I guess that was the, in 1984, was that like A-Team time? Like they were competing against the A-Team for that special. They were just like, we need explosions. No tearful hugs. That's not going to cut it in today's market. I want to see stuff blow up.
Right.
Wow. But that show did go through some crazy things. Have you ever watched the pilot of Little House on the Prairie, which I did recently? We were showing it to my children. It's gritty and dark. There are wolves. They are endangered by wolves and a very scary intrusion by native peoples who are clearly thinking of slaughtering the Ingalls family.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's dark. And that show changed in tone radically over the years. Some very silly things happened. culminating in the explosion of the town. That's nuts.
They do lean into like pioneer life being hard. Like that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
Pioneer life was not full of like revenge, spite explosions, but like the other stuff was hard. That was tough.
It was like, I'd like to go out there and protect the horses from the wolves, but I'm afraid of being scalped. It was like, that was the pilot episode of
oh my God.
Little House on the Prairie. It was rough. But yeah, it is interesting to me that Michael Landon made 431 episodes of Bonanza and then hopped over to Little House on the Prairie. And then...
Yeah.
Still not satisfied. He does Highway to Heaven. Well, I don't know how many seasons that was on, but that was on for a while. That guy, what's being done with the Michael Landon fortune?
Yeah, there better be one. He's probably been on literally like 800 episodes of television.
I'd say,
all told.
Yeah.
So it's amazing.
Yes, it is amazing.
New York Times interviewed him in the run-up to this explosion finale in 1984, and he said, quote, "I think it makes for a good, strong pioneer ending. It was also a nice catharsis for the cast and crew. There were lots of tears when we finally blew up the town. The actors had all become very attached to their own buildings, so it was very emotional."
Wow. That's a pretty good ending. That at least lets you know, like, we for sure, this is it. We are not coming back and doing any more of these. We have blown up the sets. It would be prohibitively expensive to rebuild any of this. It's gone. Yeah. I can imagine that being cathartic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I have like struck a set, you know, after a high school play or something, and it's like, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of emotional taking all this down. But they did the maximum version of that, like 200 episodes. Now we literally blow it up.
The last day of shooting on review, we shot on the stage in the morning, and then we all went to lunch, and then we came back to shoot a few other things in that building. And our line producer says that he saw my face come back from lunch and see what I did not know, which was that the crew worked through lunch to strike that set. And so I walked back in the room and it was just gone.
No.
Yes. I was like, okay, well, we're done on this set. No, off I go to lunch and then I come back from lunch, still chewing on a cookie from lunch, whatever. It is 100% gone. And I was just like, wait, what happened? But so it would have been, would have preferred to have blown it up my damn self and see it go.
Right, coming back from lunch with your dynamite, all ready to go.
Yeah, my plunger and my wire. Yeah. Pa-pow.
So
folks, that is the episode for this week. My enormous thanks to Andy Daly for having so much fun with so many shows with me right here, especially in these crazy times. I am also thrilled that Andy Daly had extra stories about the stories. Like, he knew the ER doctor who got hunted by a helicopter. And when I say an ER doctor, I mean a doctor on the show ER. I don't want any real doctors hunted. You know what I mean. Anyway, I had a lovely time talking to Mr. Daly, and in our food notes, you will find links to all of the things he's doing. In particular, his new comedy album that is entitled Four More Sweaters, Monsters Take Your Questions. Also, the complete series of Review on DVD, just amazing comedy, and I'm so glad I know about what happened to the set now. And of course, the new podcast, Bananas for Bonanza, with not only Andy Daly, but also Matt Gourley and Maria Bamford. If you like comedy and podcasting and stuff, you know who they are too. That is a stacked lineup, and it's already a very funny show. And the rest of the foot notes this week are clips of television losing its mind. It's really great. If nothing else, set aside 30 seconds for that One Tree Hill scene. It is a dog eating a heart in a hospital by accident, and the father and son who it's intended for, you know, the father's very shocked, and the son just kind of looks at him like, here we go again, or something. It's a very inscrutable face Chad Michael Murray does. So a lot of riches there for you. And beyond all that, our theme music is Chicago Falcon by the Budos Band. This episode was engineered by me in Durham, North Carolina, and by Andy Daly out on the range. No, he was at his home. Then it was edited by Chris Souza, either on the range or in his home. You be the judge. If you loved this episode, that's great. If you hated it, let me know about it on social media. That's right, social media. A place where I am excited to talk about this past season of Grey's Anatomy. It was quite an odd experience all around. What happened with Karev? I don't know, maybe you do. My Twitter account for that discussion is at Alex Schmitty. My Instagram is at Alex Schmitztagram. And I'm on the wider internet at my website, alexschmitty.com. And I'm here to say we will be back next week with more Cracked Podcast. So how about that? Talk to you then.